Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. It's the spring forecast, the Aries ingress with Zamboni Funk. So Zamboni and me and A.C., we look at the astrology of the spring quarter from the Aries ingress of the sun into the Cancer ingress of the sun. And there's a lot going on. We're going to look at the ingress chart for Washington, D.C. We're going to look at the lunar eclipse on the 24th, 25th. We're going to look at the solar eclipse on April 8th and talk a little bit about Jupiter going into Gemini after conjoining with Uranus. There are some charts on here, so if you want to see them, hop on over to YouTube and check out the video. And make sure to subscribe, like, and ring that bell notification thing so you get notifications when we put out new content. And while you're at it, we're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and all those places too. So, before we get into the episode, I do want to let you know that tickets for the Plant Cunning Conference on July 26th through 28th are live. The early bird tickets are live, which you can get at plantcunningconference.com. The Plant Cunning Conference is a conference that we host at our small farm in central New York. And this year we have Pam Montgomery doing the keynote. We have Sevensong. We have Rebecca Beyer. We have Zamboni Funk. And we have Karis Landruth and a bunch of other amazing herbalists, astrologers, magicians, and healers. And it's going to be a fantastic time. So get your tickets at plantcunningconference.com. We also do have some openings for sponsors. So if you have a business or you want to sponsor this, we have several levels. And you can email us at info@plantcunning.com to set up a sponsorship for the Plant Cunning Conference. Also, as usual, I am still offering Vedic astrology readings at a donation level. And if you're interested in that, you can contact me at info@plantcunning.com as well. And with this astrology, I'm looking at the karmic level, and I'm able to give some basic remedies, mantras, and things like that. Okay, so make sure to like, subscribe, share, give us 5-star reviews on iTunes and Apple and all those things. Those things actually do help, so we appreciate all of the likes and the shares and the reviews. So without further ado, here is the spring forecast. Okay, so today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we have the spring forecast, the Aries ingress with Zamboni Funk. How are you today, Zamboni?
What's up, y'all? I am doing very well. Lovely to be here again. Always a pleasure.
So good to see you.
Yeah. So are you excited for this spring, this spring quarter? What's it look like?
Yeah, I mean, excited is a good way to say it. Heart going pit-a-pat a little bit, you know, a little nervous, a little anxious, a little, you know what I mean? Feeling flushed sometimes, thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like before you get on a roller coaster, like, is this going
to
be fun?
Yeah. That's a real good way to describe it, for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Going up to the top, you know, like, okay. Oh, wow, we're really high up, aren't we? We sure could fall.
Nope. Am I going to throw up?
Right.
Maybe just a little bit.
I'm excited to hear more from you two about what's in store over the next few months. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, party time, you know?
Yeah.
For the whole world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do we got? We've got the ingress is happening. This is the beginning.
The ingress is the sun ingressing into Aries, right? And so we're going to cover Aries, Taurus, and Gemini time. As long as the sun is in those places, we've got a seasonal situation going on here. And so the sun moving into Aries is indicative of how this whole season and perhaps how the whole year might go, right?
Yeah, and it's the rising sign for Washington, D.C. is a fixed sign, so it will be the whole year. It's the whole...
Love it.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Then we've got two eclipses. We've got the lunar eclipse on the 24th, 25th, and
of March.
Of March, right after the equinox. And then we've got the great American solar eclipse, which I'm sure we're going to spend most of the show talking about. They've got some fun Jupiter stuff.
Yeah. And then so Jupiter is going to move in. Jupiter is currently in Taurus along with Uranus and is going to finally meet that conjunction. And so we'll see the two of them together in the sky, exactly together. And then after that, then a few weeks after that, then Jupiter is going to move into Gemini and is going to spend a year in Gemini. And so that'll be a whole different shift, a whole different vibe.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we might as well get started with just the ingress in traditional. Okay.
Ooh, look at that Jupiter Uranus right onto DC.
Right. And the sun with Neptune. So we've got in mundane astrology and like traditional Western mundane astrology, we look at the charts for the moment of the ingress or the eclipse and so on in the capital of the country that we're looking at. So we cast this for Washington DC at exactly, this is 11:07 p.m. So that's when the sun is at 0 degrees, 0 minutes Aries. And we've got a Scorpio rising. And just a quick thing too, like I know there's a lot of discussion about houses and signs and so on. And the way I look at it is when I am using Vedic astrology for looking at remedies in the karmic level, I'm using whole signs in the sidereal. When I'm doing astrological magic, I do like a porphyry or a house system like that. And I use tropical. When I'm doing horary, I use regiomontanus and I use tropical. And when I'm doing this kind of mundane astrology, I use tropical and I use Placidus. But if you don't use Placidus, you can just, you know, look at the signs and those are your houses. So just for the listeners who, you know, a lot of people get really angry about houses, but you can use different houses for different things.
How did you land on those houses for those uses?
I guess maybe I'll stop share real quick. So the way I see it is that each house system is good for a specific technique. And the technique that I learned in the tradition that I learn it that uses a certain house, that's what I do. So I use regiomontanus for horary because that's the system that William Lilly used and that tradition uses. So my teacher, Christopher Warnock, uses regiomontanus for horary. And it's good to use a quadrant house system for horary just because of the house cusps. And you can do a lot more interesting stuff with house rulers and so on. And then I've been studying with Freedom Cole in the Akutanada Parampara, the tradition of Vedic astrology. And that's what we use sidereal zodiac and we use whole sign houses. And that's just how you do it in order to be able to see the karmic level and then be able to apply remedies. So, you know, that's how it works.
whatever works with that system. Yeah.
And then for mundane astrology, actually, even in Vedic astrology, they say that tropical is best for world events. So if you're looking at world events, then, you want to use tropical. And presumably,
tropical would be better for world events because it is so geocentric, right? Because it focuses on this idea that 0 degrees of Aries is the beginning of spring and not necessarily connected to Aries as a constellation, which is apart from the Earth. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Makes sense.
And so in mundane astrology, the way I have learned mundane astrology is with this book, which is actually three books.
It's called Mundane Astrology.
Yeah. So it's a book by Raphael, who was a late 19th, early 20th century astrologer, H.S. Green, an early 20th century astrologer, and C.U. Carter, also an early 20th century astrologer. And they all use tropical and they use Placidus. So that's what I use but I like to look at both, you know. So that's just my philosophy on houses. And that may change, but that's the way it also in the tradition I'm studying with Freedom. It seems as though they will bring in things and use different techniques for different things. And you just like, that's just how you do it, how you can like, and you have like a toolkit with lots of different sets of tools.
Okay, cool. Thanks for the rundown. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so for the Aries ingress, we've got a Scorpio rising. So Mars rules this ingress. And when you have a fixed sign rising, the traditional lore is that this chart is then good for the whole year. And Mars rules it. We have the Sun here in the fifth Placidus and the sixth whole sign house in Aries. And he's moving away from a conjunction with Neptune, and he's moving away from a trine with the moon. So, yeah. So what do you think about this chart? What does this look like to you?
Sure. So, well, the first thing that we can notice is that it's Mars ruled. And so there's a lot of Mars going on here. So there's whenever we're thinking about Mars, and we can think about aggression or anger or wartime dynamics or conflict or any of that sort of stuff, right? So it is no prediction at all to be like, oh, we are moving toward escalating geopolitical conflict. Like, who didn't know that, right? But if astrology is a real thing, then it should reflect that. And this chart does reflect that. One thing that we can notice here is that we've got the moon in Leo opposite to Pluto in Aquarius here. So I would expect moon opposite Pluto kind of dynamics to be a major theme here, especially thinking with Pluto in Aquarius. Now, this is, again, fairly obvious, you know, that if we're thinking about Pluto in Aquarius as being future oriented or, you know, in space, aliens, AI, robots, and all this kind of thing. Again, we're thinking like this is probably the direction that things are going to be going here. If we're going to put that into a Mars kind of context, then we might think about like robot warfare, drones, and this kind of thing as well, right? Could show up in a major way, or advances in technology as being a major theme in the way that warfare operates. You know, I feel like we saw a fair bit of that last year while we watched the Russo-Ukrainian situation, where the primary goal had been to destroy like electrical infrastructure and that sort of thing, so as to stop communications from happening and to stop people from having the energy resources. So rather than like outright killing all the people, which could be done, and let's be real, a bunch of killing took place, but a lot of it has focused on electrical infrastructure and communications infrastructure and this kind of thing. And so I would expect a ramping up of that kind of thing. The other thing that we can notice here is as a, you know, so as a as an ingress chart for Washington, D.C., that we're specifically looking at the United States. And so the United States is then going to be represented by the first house in Scorpio, ruled by Mars. And so we've got Mars there in Aquarius. What I'm more interested in right now is the descendant in Taurus, which has Jupiter and Uranus there. And so this looks extremely volatile. This looks like unpredictable arch nemesis vibes. And it looks like, you know, with Jupiter here, it looks like the enemy is empowered in some kind of way, or the other is empowered. Maybe it's not an enemy, right? The United States is very good at making enemies. But if there are partners of any sort, then this looks like it, the partners are empowered as well. The other one, the relationship, the other one in whatever way, it seems like strong and also surprising, unexpected, volatile, changing in some kind of way.
Yeah, we
the
might be
landscape
to,
changes.
Like like big surprises with our allies.
Interesting. I wouldn't go allies here, probably.
Well, seventh house.
Yeah, if I was thinking allies, I might go 11th. Personally, you know, teamwork, cooperation, that kind of thing. And in this kind of dynamic, when I'm thinking about like a one-on-one sort of situation in the seventh house, then I am more likely to think about enemies. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the idea of US on one side and Russia on the other is very well borne out across history in a way that, you know, like allies, like, you know, like US and UK, for example, or something like this, like it just doesn't feel like it's that same sort of like one-on-one kind of dynamic, You know, if we're thinking allies and now we got to talk about NATO and stuff like this, it turns into a group dynamic. So I would probably go that way with it. But I don't know. Yeah, what do you think?
So Raphael says, the seventh house is an important one, for it governs all matters relating to foreign countries, disputes, war, international affairs, and all matters which arise in dealings with another, with other countries, basically.
Sure.
So, big surprises in these foreign relationships.
Big surprises in foreign relationships, I'd say, is a good way to describe that.
It's also really interesting how much fixed energy there is in this chart, even though, I mean, like, it's a Aries ingress, but we have the ruler of the chart in a fixed sign. We have the moon in a fixed sign. We have that Jupiter Uranus in a fixed sign. And one teaching that I've, you know, seen is the Scorpio rising is often like very fixed karma. You know, this is a situation that is, there's not much wiggle room anymore. The die has been cast.
Okay.
And also that moon there, the moon represents the people in this tradition of mundane astrology. And she's way over here in the whole, this quadrant, that she's alone. She's completely alone. Everything else is happening down here near the sun. So this shows like the American people, the people themselves, feeling very alone, isolated. You know, she's separating from a trine with the sun, which can be good, but there she's still out here alone. Another thing that I'm thinking about is this sun Neptune. They're only less than 3 degrees apart. So that's pretty close. And the sun represents the ruler, and Neptune can be like a downfall too. That's what they say in the book, in the books. So this could show a downfall of the ruling class, or particularly the president. But this is also an election year, so maybe even the whole, you know, the institution of the president, there's a lot of vagueness and fear and uncertainty.
One thing that I might think with that is, when you were talking about the moon there, I was looking at the moon in the ninth. And so moon opposite Pluto in the ninth is going to be like a crisis of faith or something like that. Like the people have a crisis of faith. And then when you brought up the election there, then it seems to me like there is less and less faith in the idea of democratic elections. Like I feel like there's a great opportunity for whoever wins for everyone to be mad about it, to be like, oh, the election was stolen, or it wasn't real, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like there's all this, like they're like trying to make sure that Trump isn't even allowed to run, and so there's all this like election tampering going on that makes it poised for people to not believe whatever happens anyway. And so if we're looking at like a fall of the ruling class, which is what you said here, then like it's that crisis of faith that really empowers that fall.
Good point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, there's probably a lot more we can go into with this chart, but I think those are like the major points.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's worth noting that Mercury is in Aries there, closely conjunct the North Node and closely conjunct Chiron, and also in the shadow period. So we're moving toward a Mercury retrograde here. And so this looks wildly confusing and extremely emotional about it.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah, for sure. So then I guess the next thing to talk about would be this lunar eclipse.
Yes, the lunar eclipse. So we're in eclipse season, big time, right? Yeah. These eclipses are not playing games with you.
Definitely not. Then the solar eclipse is definitely the big event of the season, but the lunar eclipse is an important part of it too. You know, it kind of sets it up. And for Washington, D.C., we have the 3 a.m., is the exact
on March 25th.
Yes, or in the morning, March 25th, 3 a.m. We've got this exact opposition of the sun and the moon at 5 degrees of Aries and Libra. and they're within 10 degrees of the nodes. So it's an eclipse, but it's not like a super strong eclipse. When we have Capricorn rising, cardinal sign, the moon again is off by herself. Yeah, and the ruler of the ascendant is going, Saturn, going to the third whole sign, second Placidus house in Pisces, and he is with Venus, which is can be nice, but you know, he doesn't particularly like being in Pisces. And then the sun is here in the fourth whole sign, third Placidus house. So what do you see with this chart? What do you see going on with this eclipse?
Sure. Well, it looks like everything is in Pisces. So the sun is in Aries and the moon is in Libra. Sun in Aries ruled by Mars. Mars is in Pisces. Moon in Libra ruled by Venus. Venus is in Pisces. The rising is in Capricorn, ruled by Saturn. Saturn is in Pisces. And so everything is there kind of localized in that Pisces place, right? And so we've got, it's true that Venus is there, and that's cute. We'll take every last bit of beneficence that we can get.
Uh-huh. She's exalted there in Pisces. She's exalted in Pisces. It's really totally. Nice for Saturn. Not nice for Venus, and it's nice for Saturn.
yeah, right. But then also we can see that like Venus is making a lovely sextile with mutual reception, in fact, to Jupiter in Taurus. So those two rule each other. And so it's not all terrible here, but it is an eclipse, which tends to be like unpredictable on your best day. And then it's also double malefic. We've got both Mars and Saturn here in Pisces. And so it looks rough and tumble, to be sure. You know, with the moon there on the south node, the moon is pretty uncomfortable on the south node all the time. And so, you know, the moon's job is to like nourish and caretake and this kind of thing. And the south node's job is to purge, to get rid of things. And so though there's kind of like an inimical balance between those two there. And so this looks to me like a moment where there is a bit of hope and optimism, but you really got to lean into letting go of the things that you had been thinking or that you thought were a part of you or were, you know, like it looks, you know, whenever there's a big Saturn moment like this or something like this, and then pair that with a release, it looks grieving in some kind of way. It looks like grief is an important part of the process that's going on here, you know, and if we're like thinking about this political moment across the globe, then we're like, you know, there's a lot of grief to be had here. And I wonder if there's a cry for it in this moment that I don't necessarily think is going to be, you know, held properly, but that I think there'll be a cry for it. You know what I mean? There's a need for mourning, for grieving, for that kind of like making space for loss that I think is likely to, in larger culture, be glossed over, but I think there'll be a call for it.
Like holding a vigil or something?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. And that
I've seen a lot of people. I'm sorry, say what?
The grief indication. What was that exactly again?
Oh, just looking at, so there's a, it's ruled by Saturn, and then the moon is in Libra, which is ruled by Venus. And so Venus is there with Saturn, and the moon in Libra is on the south node, which has to do with releasing things.
Okay.
And so when we're looking at release and we're looking at Saturn, who's the goat god of death, who also is the negation one, the one who says no, and this kind of thing, there's a lot of discomfort there, that sort of thing. Then that's what I'm like kind of looking at here.
Very cool. Okay, got it.
And Saturn is sorrow. Saturn is sorrow, sure. And he's in Pisces, very emotional, wet sign. So that's a very, that's a good crying thing there for sure. Release of tears and emotions.
Yeah, and if we're thinking about crying, then like, you know, Chiron also is a very crying kind of object, you know? And so this, all that, there's like a lot of stuff going on in Aries here with the sun here and the north node and Mercury heading toward retrograde. And then also Chiron is here, and Chiron is actually going to feature very prominently in the next eclipse that we've got going in 2 weeks. And so Chiron is very much like the sort of sensitive thing that you never quite get around it. You never quite heal from that wound or whatever it is. And so it continues to bring about strong emotion and tears and all the rest of that. And so we're definitely looking at that sort of like major strong emotion that just like, how do you even deal?
Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And just so the Saturn is also going to the second Placidus house. So that is showing an emphasis on the budget as far as like the state of the United States goes, like the larger political entity of the United States. There's a focus on budget, on money. And third, you know, he's in the third whole sign. So that's also more like the local economy, maybe, you know, if we're looking at him in the second quadrant, third whole sign, that's maybe a local economy. And that's a source of good, because we've got that nice Venus there. So Venus is exalted conjunct Saturn, and then she's in that nice mutual reception with Jupiter. So maybe some big surprises there too, because of the Uranus.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that I trust Venus and Pisces to make a budget.
True.
You know, yeah. Venus in Pisces is very good at spending lavishly, at engaging delicious things, especially Venus and Jupiter together gets very overindulgent sometimes. Oh my goodness, it's so sweet and delicious. And can I have some more, please? And I don't even drink champagne, but bring some more champagne, please. Okay.
You know what? Yeah.
Bottle service, you know? This,
yeah.
I'm kind of getting a picture now of this as like the last hurrah. You know, like it's like Venus wants to party, and she's in the third house is partying as well.
Uh-huh.
And it just like spending all that money, spending everything, like this is like the last time to really have a good time. But Saturn is right there being like, you know, everyone's in debt now, even more and more and more and more. People can't pay their bills. Yeah. It's kind of like that dissociation from reality and like that big party
it's the end of the world as we know it. Some pop, some champagne. Yeah.
Cause it's Tennessee. I'm seeing in society right now, especially people are just like not thinking about tomorrow and just spending, because tomorrow may not even, we don't know what's happening tomorrow.
Sure. Yeah. And like, I'm not sure how much I am in this camp, but I have heard commentators talking about like the political elites spending money as if it's not going to be a real thing anymore. Like rack up all the debt because we're shifting to a digital currency system anyway. And so like the spend, like take out loans as if you're not going to pay them back, because the plan is not to pay them back.
Right. Yeah, if we're getting like massive inflation or the dollar is destroyed fall on everything, one of those situations happens, then it that very well may be the case.
And I definitely would think that Jupiter with Uranus is probably going to be good for inflation.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Boy. If I were inflation and I had Jupiter Uranus on my side, I would be like, hell yeah.
So with this lunar eclipse, any like advice for listeners on how to navigate these waters? Like, should they go take out a bunch of loans they're not going to pay back and have some
anger? Yeah, I mean, this is not financial advice, but yeah, I like what if I were going to give advice about this, then I probably would ignore the financial thing entirely. Or if you're going to do something financial, do something lavish financially. Like, can you pay a mourner? Can you like pay somebody to wail?
Yeah.
You know, like these are things these are professions even that I think are maybe it's time for them to come back into fashion.
Yeah.
So like having somebody whose job it is to wail when bad things happen, this might be something worth worth spending some time with. It might be worth navigating your grief in some kind of major way. Maybe, you know, like one of the things that people talk about a lot when talking about like the grief around a breakup or something like that is that you don't necessarily just grieve the present moment and the break that you have with that person, but rather you also grieve the loss of the future that you don't get. Mm-hmm. And I think that that might be relevant here when we're thinking about like the society that we live in and the society that we thought we were going to get when it was the 90s. And then now we're here and it's like, oh, this is not going to be like this. And maybe I need to do some grieving about that. Something like this.
That's good advice. Okay.
Yeah. It might be even good to like, to write or create art, music, you know, these Venus things around sorrow.
Yeah, that's big Venus Saturn in Pisces energy for sure. And Venus Saturn in Pisces is going to be real good for taking whatever kind of big emotions that you don't necessarily have a name for and then like making some art about it, some art that is intelligible in a way that prose is not necessarily. That this is really good for that.
Excellent.
Yeah. So the next big thing we've got is the big thing. It's the solar eclipse on the 8th of April. And I guess before we get into that, because we're probably going to spend the bulk of the rest of the time talking about that. Do you have any plans for this eclipse or?
I don't have any plans for this eclipse.
So I've, Isaac, we're just talking about this. Like I've been seeing all of these, you know, people are making trips like along the path of totality of this eclipse to go like hang out underneath the rays of this eclipse, and towns are like completely booked out with hotels all along the path of totality, all these things. There's festivals happening. So like there seems to be a perception that eclipses are just like this really cool cosmic event in the sky that people want to like immerse themselves in and be at the eclipse. And I'm wondering how you both feel about eclipse energy in general. And is that really a good idea to go like party under the open sky of the eclipse? Like, or are we kind of approaching this in the wrong way?
So when we think about eclipses, then I think the dragon imagery that we always talk about whenever eclipses show up is relevant. And so dragons are large and powerful and magnificent and also rare to behold. And so there is a kind of value in the rarity, the scarcity of that event. There, you don't get very many opportunities to see a cosmic calamity take place, right? Like you can go and look at it and watch it in the sky, and it gets super weird when you're under an eclipse, then like, and it's supposed to be bright outside and then it's not anymore. And then the nighttime bugs come out and it's super like weird and liminal. Then that is a unique experience that you don't often get an opportunity to experience, right? And so I understand why people would seek that out and go try to do that. And I've known people who are eclipse chasers, people who like go across the world when there's going to be a total eclipse somewhere, then they go and make sure to put themselves in that place and watch the event happen and take pictures or whatever. And you know, I've had conversations with those people where I'm like, what about the baleful rays? And they're like, I'm fine, you know, like cool. Live your life. Do your thing.
I would love to see their charts.
Yeah, me too. That's actually what I was thinking.
Right? Yeah. Maybe that's a thing that we could do. We can like get people who are like into the eclipse situation and just like take a look
at research projects.
Yeah, exactly. This is a good opportunity for a research project here, I think. Yeah. That's not my plan. I don't think that I am this. I get this question all the time. Like, what do we do in eclipses? Like, is it an appropriate time to cast your spells or do your manifestations or whatever it is? I always refer back to the dragon thing, which is like your arms are too short to box with dragons. And the dragons think it's funny when you order them around, and they think it's so funny that they will crush you in order to make a point. And they'll think it's hilarious the whole time. And so I'm because I have such respect for that kind of, so like, you know, basically whenever you're doing your manifestation thing or you're like casting your spells or whatever, you're sort of being like, I'm the boss and we're going to do what I said. And dragons do not respect that authority in the slightest. And so they will, because eclipse energy is so much bigger and unpredictable than whatever your little sigils are or whatever, then there's an opportunity there for things to go awry, for things to go sideways in a way that you might not have imagined and that could be potentially bad for you in a way that it like snuffs the light out. So I would be aware of that and like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the eclipse is like shadow. Like it's literally like casting a shadow. And so I imagine that it would be maybe good for like the shadow work or like the internal, like looking internally instead of like trying to like do a magical act externally out in the world. Like maybe just like looking at that shadow.
So in the tradition, the Jyotish tradition I study in, the eclipses are a really good time to do mantra and to meditate. So that's what I'm going to be doing. And it even superpowers your mantras. They say that if you can, you can do the mantras during the actual eclipse, then they're like 1,000 or 10,000 times more potent. So it's a really great opportunity to do mantras. And it's even more difficult during that time period to keep your mind on the mantra and to say it correctly. But in this tradition too, in India, the nodes aren't dragons, they're demons. You know, Rahu and Ketu are the head and the tail of the demon. So they're definitely considered malefic and they aren't rays that you want to be soaking up. You know, if I see a beautiful conjunction of Venus and Jupiter in, you know, in the sky, I would love to go soak that up, but I don't want to be soaking up Rahu.
Yeah,
you know. And the other thing is, like, I have also been seeing the festivals popping up for the eclipse, and I don't think that's a good idea. And I actually do have a story about that too. There's a festival that my band used to play at, and they're doing one on the eclipse for the eclipse in the eclipse path this year. And when we talk about eclipse, there's actually, like, you know, it's a couple months before and a couple months after, and even up to 6 months to a whole year after that the eclipse has its effect. And I was seeing the effects of this eclipse months ago, actually. And one of them is this eclipse festival, which they announced a headliner that was highly controversial. And half the people who go in that community had a hard block, and that blew up. Like, everyone was like, I can't believe you would have this person here. Like, I'm not coming. I'm so sad about, I'm broken up that you would do this. We talked about this. Like, why are you doing this? Like, this is not healthy. This is not love and light. This is, this is enabling abusers. And so, like, the festival, like, split in half, you know, he's still going to do it. There's still going to happen
with that headliner.
Whoa. But like half of the community is no longer a part of, like, wants nothing to do with that festival anymore.
Sure. So. Yeah. You know, a cancellation campaign, I think, is real big eclipse energy, right?
Okay.
I don't want to look at it anymore. Right. Wow. Like, or like get rid of this famous face. Uh-huh. Right. So like the shadow across the sun. And whenever we're thinking about eclipses and like the viability of events during the eclipses or this kind of thing, then like I talk about dragons and demons and whatever, right? Like, and so there's like a lot of mythology associated there, but I think that it's very simple to look at the sun and the moon and to be like, oh, the light from the sun and the moon gives life. We like the light from the sun and the moon.
Sure.
And then when we don't get the light from the sun anymore, especially the sun, because the moon like is light and dark and goes through a lot of vicissitudes all the time, right? But the sun reliably is very bright all the time, every day. And so then if the sun is not going to shine that light anymore, then like at very least it's extremely uncertain and likely we can consider it a problem.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a source of all life in this on the planet,
literally. So we don't get that life-giving light anymore, even if it's only for a few minutes. It's like, What are we supposed to do with this? I don't know.
It's a little unsettling.
And and people oftentimes, even in this, well, especially in this culture, discount the symbolic.
Truly.
But, you know, it actually is very important, even on a symbolic level, that the sun is eclipsed. And that's also important as to where the sun is eclipsed and where that eclipse is visible from, you know, the eclipse path. So that's one thing I want to talk about for sure, is like the eclipse path and how it intersects with other paths.
Yeah. So we have these eclipses, you know, every so often, every few years, or whatever. So like, what are the major signifiers of this particular eclipse? Like,
so there's two eclipses, there's four eclipses every year.
Okay.
You know, but it's rare that you actually see a total eclipse in a particular spot.
Yeah.
So that's what's in this total eclipse is cutting the country in half, and it intersects a different total eclipse, total solar eclipse from 2017 that also cut this country in half. So there's a big X. we'll look at that.
But where is that X, Isaac?
Well,
where's the intersection there?
So one of the intersection of those two is actually, I think, St. Louis. But the intersection of this solar eclipse and then the, let me find the, I'm going to go ahead and share the screen.
Yeah, I saw you had some maps.
Yeah. okay, this one. Yeah. So there are actually three eclipses that intersect here recently. So can you see this?
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is the total solar eclipse path of April 8th, 2024. This is going all the way through North America. And it cuts the United States from Maine through Texas. Now, the total solar eclipse of 2017, which cut the U.S. from, you know, from Washington through South Carolina, that intersects around St. Louis. But the annular solar eclipse of October 14, 2023, which was just last year, this cuts it right down here in
Texas.
And I think that is very symbolic.
I'm confused about how do these eclipses from 2017 and the one that's about to happen, or the one from 2023 and the one that's about to happen, so they still have effects? Those older eclipses have effects on this eclipse?
I would say that definitely the October 14th, 2023 eclipse is still in effect, because that was in the same set of signs here. And eclipses, like Isaac was saying before, eclipses sort of have their effects for months in either direction. And so we are still currently in the midst of those eclipse effects. And so we will see both of those, like April 9th this year and October 14th last year, we'll see those showing up in a major way. It's interesting that they are intersecting there in Texas, and not only in Texas, but in like kind of Southern Texas, right? Where we have seen a lot of stuff around border crisis and all the rest of that taking place here, and this idea of like what constitutes, what even am a border, and then what constitutes a nation state, and what is appropriate, what are appropriate boundaries to have, and what are inappropriate boundaries to have, and this kind of thing. Like, there's been a lot of discussion and debate around that, especially in that spot in Texas. And furthermore, there has been a divestment from the federal government as a result of those border discussions. And so there's something very important that looks like it wants to take place there.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the older eclipse from August of 2017, then I'm not sure that eclipse is still like reverberating in the same way. Because I was in Leo and Aquarius, and I don't remember if that was a solar eclipse, and so it would have been in Leo. So like, you know, so It's interesting there that Leo is the domicile of the sun and Aries is the exaltation of the sun. And so we've got strong sun energy going on here. So if we're thinking about figureheads or emperors or heads of state or any of that sort of thing, famous faces, again, celebrities, all this sort of stuff might come up here. So I'm interested to see what kinds of things that lends itself to here.
Yeah.
Power struggles, certainly. It's interesting to me that, like, in St. Louis, I'm thinking like Mason Dixon.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so one thing that when we talked with Bill Meridian a few weeks ago about eclipses, mm-hmm. he mentioned how the eclipse paths play an important role in the people who are born with those eclipse paths in their, and it'll even go a full year in either direction, depending on like what planets get hit by that eclipse, you know, like what point in their chart that eclipse hits, but that path is very important to that person, their eclipse. So Robert E. Lee had an eclipse that cut the U.S. in half, and it intersected with the woman who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin at Gettysburg, those two paths. So, and those were in the early 1800s, and when we didn't see that battle until 60 years later, almost 50 years later.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that's the kind of thing that can...
So we're looking at historical ramifications that go far beyond 6 months in either direction.
Right, because these eclipse paths are embedded in the whoever's born in 2017, mm-hmm. in 2024, mm-hmm. and 2023, mm-hmm. and then they're also hitting the charts of wherever that eclipse happened, whatever point that happened, people who have their sons there or who have their ascendant lord there, like that's going to be very important, you know. So that eclipse hit Lee's Mars, you know, so he became a soldier and fought in wars, and so that's part of it. So but I do think that for in terms of the intersection of eclipse points, this is actually more important than the one in Texas, even though this is not a total solar eclipse, because in general, total solar eclipses are more powerful than annular. They have more effect because you know, obviously they're stronger, more powerful, but this South Texas is it's really kind of interesting what's happening there and how that, like when we were talking in December, and we're talking about these eclipses and intersecting in Texas, we were talking about how there's a defederalization or a decentralization happening. And then it was like a month or two later when the governor of Texas announced that he was going to disregard the president's directives and put soldiers on the border. And that's like a direct defederalization, decentralization movement happening. And like all the Republican governors got on his side and said that they would support him. So like that was definitely a stirring of what exactly these eclipses, in my opinion, represent.
Yeah. Especially if we're in a moment where there's like a crisis of faith going on around the leadership,
yeah,
you know, then it makes it provides a very strong moment for some kind of usurp to take place.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I want to kind of actually just go ahead and look at this at the eclipse chart.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because
if I were a general who was ready to take over a government.
Yeah, right. There haven't been two less popular candidates since the last time these two candidates ran against each other.
We haven't seen candidates this unpopular since the last time.
they're the same candidates.
Right. They really are.
I can't believe it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. So looking at this eclipse chart, right? We've got a new moon in Aries, closely conjunct the North Node, close like partile conjunct Chiron, very good for crying. Very good for old wounds that have not yet healed, you know. So if we want to think about how like racial tensions are bubbling and this kind of thing, right, especially in the deep South, and like we're We're in a moment where we might feel some feelings around all this kind of stuff, right? Also, it's all happening in Aries. And so that Aries stuff is ruled by Mars, and Mars is closely conjunct Saturn and applying to Saturn in that moment. So that's our like double malefic energy going on, like really big, like difficulty and anxiety. We're looking at frustration whenever we're looking at Mars Saturn dynamics. Mars wants to go, go, go. Saturn's like, stop all that. And so there's like a desire to move, but an inability to move. And so there's like trouble and like heart issues that can show up there. And then all of that. So we're looking at like wartime dynamics, this kind of thing, right? And it's worth noting as well, on the last eclipse, October 7th was happened, you know? And so we're like looking at the, you know, I've heard people saying like, is this our Franz Ferdinand moment, you know, like where October 7th leads to a larger political conflict that doesn't center in that one place, but then rather expands to the whole world at large or something like this, right? So, and that was like right on an eclipse, and that was also a big Mars Pluto energy at the same time. So taking a look at that sort of situation, but then also, so thinking about all of that and the Mars Saturn and warring and whatever else, but then looking at Mars Saturn being in Pisces, which is ruled by Jupiter, and Jupiter is closely conjunct Uranus. So this adds an extra amount of instability or left field, out of the blue dynamics, which really looks like, it looks like conflict and upset as well. It looks like people you didn't expect to show up in the fray or to win or something like this. It looks like, or maybe not even people, right? Like things that you didn't think that were going to happen. Like some birds came in and destroyed the barracks or something, or like ate all the food. And so then that like changed the course of the war because of something that nobody saw coming, right? Like this is the kind of dynamic that we're looking at here.
Yeah, and mentioning the Gaza situation, I was looking back at eclipses that happened on that degree. And okay. So the last, and you can do that by just looking at the Metonic cycle. Every 19 years, there'll be a repeat, basically. And so there was an eclipse on April 8th of 2005. And actually, I might have that too. But yeah. So that one happened, and it was when, and one of the things that Bill Meridian was saying in his book is that there's a synchronicity to events that happen, though they're not causal. Like, so if so during when this eclipse is happening, all the things that are happening all across the world are also affected by that eclipse. And when that eclipse happens again, when an eclipse happens at that point again, then those things happen again. So it's important to note that on April 8th in 2005, in the year 2005, Israel pulled out of Gaza. This was when Gaza was created basically as a Palestinian country. There were settlers, there were Israeli settlers in Gaza before that. And then in 2005, Israel pulled out all the settlers, all the Israeli settlers from Gaza, and created the what is considered called an open air prison at that time. So it's really a synchronous event, you know. So that happened at the last time an eclipse happened on the 19 degrees of Aries. And
so, are you suggesting that we are likely to see an Israeli retreat of some sort?
So it's like something is happening in Gaza at the same time, you know, 19 years later. I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know if it's going to end with Israel pulling out again or.
Yeah, it's hard to know, right? It's hard to know in advance. Also, one thing that I noticed before we started rolling here was that we currently have Mercury on the North Node in Aries. which is very good for a lot of information and confusion about it. So I was looking at that and I was like, oh, I'm about to make a bunch of wrong predictions. So with that caveat, I'm absolutely wrong about what I'm about to say here. But okay. With that said, I'm going to say it anyway. It's interesting to me that this eclipse that we're about to see in April is over the United States and not yep. over Israel and Gaza, right?
Right.
Yep. And so if we're looking at Israel and Gaza, who seem to be triggered by Aries and Libra eclipses,
yeah,
and who seem to be wildly triggered by Mars-Pluto dynamics, right? And we're this year is the year of Mars-Pluto dynamics. We get Mars-Pluto dynamics all year. We saw Mars-Pluto conjunct in Aquarius earlier in the year, and that coincided with the Israeli ground invasion of Gaza. And then, you know, and then so we're after all this happens, and Mars is going to move into Aries, and so then that's going to be super Mars on the North Node, all Mars everything. And then after that, Mars is going to move into Taurus, where we're going to see a square to Pluto. And then more interestingly, later on in the year, we're going to have Mars opposite to Pluto for like 4 months or some shit, because there's going to be a Mars retrograde. And so we're going to see three oppositions to Pluto. One of them's going to happen in Capricorn and Cancer. It's like a mess, right? The whole thing is a mess. A lot of Mars Pluto going on here. But what I'm trying to get at here is this eclipse that we're looking at is happening over the United States. And so the United States' support of Israel is instrumental in Israel's ability to do what they're doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if we're seeing an eclipse over the United States, which looks like probably some kind of change in authority or leadership or something like this, also it looks like an upset of some sort. It looks like left field dynamics coming in and shifting the landscape in an important way that we might not have seen coming. To my mind, this looks like Israel sees a change in the way that they get support from the United States in some kind of yeah. major way.
I see that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And a true upset would be to lose support in some kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the way to look at it, is like things recur every 19 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like that is getting activated again. But it also seems that maybe like the Israel-Gaza affects the United States as well. So like mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. could be like the Franz Ferdinand moment, or just like the disapproval of the way that the U.S. is handling the situation may cause that agent to come out of left field.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you're right.
There's an anger with the way that the U.S. has been supported Israel from both mm-hmm. big sections of the left and the right.
Mm-hmm.
So
right, yeah, because the left and the right are like not real concepts anymore.
right,
you know, like the conservatives mm-hmm. now have like a certain rebellious feeling about them, right? Like yeah, rather yeah. than like they like being conservative is countercultural now. And, yeah. and so like, and that is a contradiction in terms. And so there's like the left, right, conservative, liberal, like none of this shit means anything anymore. Right. And people are becoming aware of this. And so that makes left field dynamics possible. One mm-hmm. thing that I think is interesting here, I think before we started rolling, you were talking about like a Uranus and Gemini type figure, like an FDR or a George Washington or something like this. Like we expect that in the history of the United States, as the Uranus in Gemini is an extremely important moment in the history of the United States. It coincides with the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and with World War II. And so every time that has happened, we've seen a major restructuring in the way that the United States interacts with itself and the world at large. And so, and each of those have seen a figurehead which has spearheaded that kind of change, and there's been like a war to go with that, right? And so what we expect is for a figure like that to show up, and for this figure to probably have like a major Uranus placement in some kind of way, right? Yeah. Like, or you know, like some kind of, we would expect Uranus in Gemini to interact with that person's chart in a major way. And yeah. So piggybacking off of what you had said before about like left field dynamics and like all sorts of stuff, like all sorts of pressures and the inability of left and right to make any kind of sense, leaves an opening for a new figure who we might not have seen coming to emerge onto the scene and to take hold in a way that we might not have predicted before.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so I'm still thinking about how that happens, you know, like, is it going to happen from like a vice president candidate, or is it going to come from like somebody like RFK Jr. Or is it going to become from something that we can't even see at this moment? And it's probably something that we can't even see at this moment, but
if RFK started winning, that would be a real upset. I would have, no one sees that coming right now. No one thinks that RFK is going to win shit.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So, but
we should look at his chart.
Yeah. I can't find his ascendant degree. Uh-huh. So, but that does actually bring up something else going back to this.
Somebody should message Charles Eisenstein about that.
Yeah. I'm trying to find, like, the really smart people don't put their, if you're a politician, you put up several different charts.
Mm. Right. Right.
Or none.
Shout out to Putin.
Right. Yeah. So if we go back to this eclipse chart, the other thing that's really, so there are a couple things that are very interesting about this chart. One is that the ruler is Mars conjunct Saturn. That's like really not fun. Really not fun. It's death energy. The other is that the sun was just in his exaltation degree. 18 degrees of Aries is the exaltation of the sun, the degree of exaltation of the sun. And so this is an eclipse that's happening a day after the sun was at the height of his power.
Wow.
The other thing that is really fascinating to me is that the sun, at the exact conjunction of the sun and the moon, which is when the eclipse happens, Chiron is exactly partile. He's exactly conjunct this eclipse. He's at 19 degrees, 24 minutes of Aries. And that's notable. You know, it's very rare for another planet to be exactly conjunct. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that brings to mind, I mean, like, what is Chiron? Who is Chiron? Mm-hmm. It's the wounded healer is how we look at it often. And so in one way, that could be RFK, right? Like, he has that voice as though he's a wounded.
True indeed.
And we do, and he's claiming to be somebody who can heal the divide, right? So he could potentially embody that archetype, but it could also be somebody else. But that's one way of looking at the Chiron right there. But what do you see anything about that Chiron? What do you make of that very close Chiron conjunction?
So when I think about Chiron, I think about the wound more than I think about the healer. Mm-hmm. I think about the thing that like is ongoing and that continues to deliver pain no matter what you do for it, right? And so if we're thinking about that in the context of the United States and in the context of like the like major divides that cause all kinds of like strife and gear grinding in between the people, then I think it's very likely for, you know, like, and people like culture wars, right? Culture wars have been going on for however many years, right? I wonder if this like reaches a certain kind of peak that really hits something difficult and painful. You know, like, I think the race stuff, I think the gender stuff, you know, like the whole of the like identity politics moment that we're in and have been in for some time, and there's been some resistance to it and pushing back and forth and back again and all that sort of stuff. I think that this is a moment for that to really show up. And, you know, like, so the sun was just at the height of its power, right? The sun in its exaltation. The sun also in its exaltation was on the North Node as well. Yeah. And so that is, I would not call that the height of the sun's power because of the shadow, right? When we're thinking about the nodes, but then also the North Node tends to be an increase. It tends to do more of whatever it touches, right? And yeah. So if I'm thinking about the sun at the height of its power in Aries, whenever I think about Aries, then one of my favorite images is the match flame, right? So you like strike the match, it burns super brightly for a moment. That's enough to catch a fire. It's a cardinal sign, right? And then after a few seconds, then your match burns out and it's like, there's not very much there, right? So a lot of sun, bright burning energy on the North Node, in the sun's exaltation, along with Chiron, looks like going super hard and then breaking at a certain point, right? Like burning so brightly that a kind of burnout happens that, and it's not even regular burnout. It's like burnout that turns into the flu and pneumonia or something like that, right? Like it's going so hard that you like pass that threshold and you become injured as a result of that and or get a wound, right? And so that is what it looks like to me. And so, you know, this celebrity culture has been on its last legs for a minute, and there's been all this divide around like politics and identifiers, and it, you know, politics is very like team sports, and so it doesn't even matter what you think, but more like which people are you going to support and which team are you on and this kind of thing. So like, and all of that is looking super, it like this infrastructure of it is extremely rickety. Like all of that like wants to break down. I saw a meme the other day that showed like a Boeing like legs underneath a porch. And so the porch was like the US economy, and the two like Boeing legs were NVIDIA and Taylor Swift. And so that like feels like what's going on here, you know what I mean? And so, and I think actually Taylor Swift is a really good example of like the wild celebrity situation, you know, like we were watching a football game, and then like all of like half of the football content is Taylor Swift content also, you know, like it turns into like a parody of itself.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And we're on the verge of the AI takeover of celebrity culture too. It's like in one way, like with the TikTok and everything, it's like everyone has their 15 seconds of fame, but even that, like there's the, you know, movies that will be made with deep fakes, you know, you don't even have to be, they'll just like recycle Marilyn Monroe and George Clooney. You know what
and
I mean?
Think that it's going to sell tickets. Like, I don't understand this at all. Yeah, you know, you mentioned TikTok just now, and it made me think about the TikTok ban.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is going to play in here some way, you know, with TikTok being the very, like, very face-oriented, very, like, I'm just going to, like, talk to the camera and talk about things and talk, and then the idea that it is information that is subversive and also, like, taking all of your information, even when you're not in the app, then you're, like, it like, catches all your other keystrokes and stuff like that, like, that seems relevant here. I don't know that I can articulate it into something.
I've got a wingnut theory here. Okay,
so, hit it.
So the TikTok ban, partially the now is part of it is that they want to a conspiracy theory on the left is that they want to do this because of there are like over 10 times the amount of content for pro Gaza than pro Israel on TikTok. And so they want to shut it down so there's no more pro-Gaza stuff, right?
Sure.
And so then if they shut down TikTok because of the Gaza-Israel situation, then all of the young people are going to get so mad that they'll vote for RFK.
All right, that was big left field energy. Did not see that coming at all.
Okay. Yeah.
Could be.
It's going to be something like that. Or maybe they'll all vote for I don't know who else is running.
A wave of fury from young people does make a lot of sense with a big North Node eclipse in Aries.
Yeah. Yeah, and doing something like banning TikTok.
Do that.
Yeah, right?
Cuz that's like all they have. You know what I mean, it's like that's all like a lot of people, like, you know, I don't know. So, but the other thing about this eclipse is we have this well, one thing I do want to say too is that like the sun, about this, the sun going from the height of its power to the being eclipsed, and with these other things, it really does look like, you know, and we know that the elite class is senile, but this recycling of the current elite class, and that's like we're at that stage in the cycles where it's not just Joe Biden or Trump, or it's all of those senators that are 90 years old. It's all of those, the business tycoons that are like that. And then all of their children who are totally don't have any idea what working class people or like anybody else in America actually, what their experience is. Mm-hmm. They're all like in these bubbles, and that elite class, that son being falling from grace, they've lost the mandate of heaven. So that's another thing that I see with this eclipse too, is it's presaging the recycling of the elite class. But we also have here the next thing we should talk about right here, the 10th house of the eclipse. We have this Jupiter Uranus conjunction. That's big surprises, big unexpected changes. And 10th house is also the house of the administration. Like this is the rulership of the U.S. right?
Mm-hmm.
So the sun represents the ruler. The 10th house also represents the ruler, the ruling class, or even more particularly the president.
Executive branch.
Yeah. So it's the executives. And that big surprises in that area. So again, left field, again.
Hard to predict, yeah. But something.
But this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction is very important. That's the next thing we want to talk about. So what do you see about this conjunction, and how does it impact what's going on in the U.S. and in the world?
Yeah. So one way that you can read Jupiter-Uranus is surprising good things, right? Because Jupiter is good things and Uranus is surprises. And so that is possible. And I definitely think that especially on the local level, we are likely to see that kind of thing taking place. You know, wherever like somebody who is just somebody and then like a windfall shows up for them or this kind of thing, like that looks really cute. Jupiter and Uranus the way that I am more likely to read it is, as you said, big surprises, right? I would think, so Jupiter's job is to confirm, affirm, say yes to things. And so here, Jupiter is saying yes to Uranus. So we can look at what has Uranus in Taurus been doing for the last 6 years or whatever, right? Since 2018. So Uranus has been associated with, well, immediately upon entering Taurus, then we saw some volcanic eruptions in Hawaii. And so we have seen much change in climate patterns. And since that time, they've talked about like the emergence of new kinds of clouds and this kind of thing as well, right? So like a difference in the way that the Earth operates. And so Jupiter looks like it wants to ramp that up in a big kind of way. Uranus and Taurus has also been associated with labor struggles and people. So like there's a big farming protests going on in Europe. There's all sorts of supply chain disruption. We're like thinking about Ukraine and Russia. We're thinking about wheat supplies. We're thinking about gas supplies and these kinds of things, right? We can't forget the Nord Stream pipeline that went down a year ago. And so like all of that sort of stuff looks like has already been disrupted. And we're looking at, I think Uranus and Taurus was associated with, what was that? It was Hobby Lobby. Was it that like had a moment in where like suddenly Hobby Lobby was like the biggest corporate player in town, like with stock prices shot up super quick and then like tanked a little while after that. And so like that kind of volatility in markets and this kind of thing, and not being able to necessarily know, like, so we can look at Google and their Gemini AI fiasco, right? And so there's this idea of like such a major player, the top dog in the game, kind of sucking.
Okay.
And so then And so there's like all of the, so now there's jockeying for position. So people that you might not have seen coming, who knew who OpenAI was 2 years ago? You know what I mean? Like, and now suddenly they're like a major player and ready to like take things over or something like this, right? So seeing all of that kind of volatility in the marketplace, Bitcoin has seen a major fluctuation throughout this time, and the nature of value has seen some changes in the during this time here as well, right? So what I'm seeing here with Jupiter conjunct Uranus is Jupiter is saying yes to all of the Uranus things, all of this volatility that's taking place here, all of the changes in. And so I think about Uranus and Taurus, Taurus being like fixed Earth, right? I think about that as being the landscape that we inhabit. And so Uranus making major and surprising changes to the landscape, and Uranus or and Jupiter being like, yes, do more of that.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting. I guess
the other thing about that is the inflation, right?
Right. Yes, yes.
Because that's definitely been a big thing.
Change in the mm-hmm. landscape.
Big change in markets and in land prices as well.
Mm-hmm.
So hyperinflation? Brief hyperinflation? Maybe. I hope not.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, we're definitely not looking at prices going down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
But then Jupiter is only in Taurus then for mm-hmm. a month, basically. Like he's speeding up real fast right now. And he's gonna just like burst into Gemini.
And then be there for a while.
Not even that long, really. He's going pretty fast now. Mm. But generally, it's about a year, but I'm not sure exactly how long it'll be in Gemini. So, what about Jupiter in Gemini? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, so Jupiter in Gemini is an interesting case. Jupiter, especially in that first decan of Gemini, Gemini is a sign that is ruled by Mercury, and generally Jupiter doesn't like the Mercury sign. So we're talking about Gemini here and Virgo. Jupiter is said to be in detriment in those places. Jupiter is opposite from his own domicile and therefore as far away from home as possible. So this is a placement that Jupiter is typically not super comfortable with, right? So Jupiter's job is to see the big picture and make wisdom and large information unintelligible, understood and intelligible by like sort of like generating a cohesive whole. Gemini and Mercury signs rather take the whole and divide it into component parts so as to sort things and make them intelligible this way, right? And so Jupiter and Mercury disagree on these things. And so when Jupiter is in Mercury's sign, then Jupiter is kind of uncomfortable in that position. It's a bit of a slog for Jupiter to do the Jupiter things, to generate that kind of cohesive whole wisdom from that space. Now, with that said, Jupiter in the first decan of Gemini, in the first 10 degrees of that sign, is in decanic dignity. This is to say that Jupiter rules that first 10 degrees of Gemini. And so decanic dignity is like, it's like having your wits about you even in a foreign land. It's like you've got your own personal talents that you're good at, and those things give you an advantage even when you're like far away from home and don't necessarily have a lot of backing or support behind you, right? So Jupiter in this first bit of Gemini is very good. This is like a jack of all trades kind of energy, like has a lot, extremely multi-talented. I see this in clients all the time where you kind of have trouble deciding what the right thing to do is because you've got a lot of different talents. It could go in a lot of different ways. And so Jupiter in Gemini is very good for seeing a lot. And so in a moment where we're dealing with one of the primary difficulties that we have right now is too much information. In the era of deepfakes and AI and propaganda and all the rest of it, there's so much information going on that it's impossible to know what's really real. And so I think that Jupiter in Gemini is going to be very good for assimilating information and finding ways to multitask about it, right? Like, it's a little bit like what you were saying before about different house systems for different applications. Like, Jupiter in Gemini is going to be very good for being like, oh, this goes to that thing, and so we're going to use this house system, and we're going to do this thing for this one, and like moving around back and forth and like just keeping everything straight. Jupiter in Gemini is really good for that kind of thing. Jupiter in Gemini is also immediately making a trine to Pluto in Aquarius. So this is going to support, say yes to, confirm Pluto in Aquarius things, right? So this is actually going to lead to more information still, right? Jupiter in Gemini looks really good for making some deep fakes. If you want to make some deep fakes, your time is coming.
Okay.
So that's going on here. Then also, Jupiter in Gemini is going to make a square to Saturn in Pisces, who is also ruled by Jupiter.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's actually the main thing that we run into with Jupiter in Gemini. And as we see this year-long transit starting to progress, because that trine to Pluto is like pretty quick at the beginning and then kind of fades a little bit. So as we see Jupiter moving through Gemini, and Saturn is moving through further and further into Pisces, then we're going to see that square between Jupiter and Gemini and Saturn in Pisces as kind of the main thing that's going on here. So this is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, because Jupiter rules Saturn in Pisces, and so Jupiter's got a little bit of a leg up in that regard, but Saturn is in the overcoming position, and so Saturn has a leg up in that regard. So we're definitely looking, and Saturn's going to be all like melancholy and this kind of thing in Pisces. Okay. We're thinking about like submarines getting crushed under the weight of the ocean and this kind of thing, right? And the Kraken, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like sea monsters, there's big sea monsters energy. I didn't mention that while like Mars and Saturn are conjunct in Pisces, but this looks like some sea monsters to me. So see that sort of stuff going on in Pisces, and then Jupiter moving into Gemini under the square of that. So Jupiter in Gemini is not easily able to just do the Jupiter things, partially because it's in Gemini and also because it's under a square to Saturn. So we're, as far as like making sense of the whole thing and not getting bogged down by the like depressive anxiety of it all, this looks tough for Jupiter to get through all of that. However, it does look like Jupiter can help Saturn to do some Saturn things here, which may be helpful, right? Because if we're in a moment of too much information, this is what I say about how to read astrology all the time, is that like there's too much information in the chart. There's like all of the information about a person's whole life. This is too much information. So what you need to do is you need to choke that. You need to limit the amount of information that you actually look at, and by limiting that information, then you can make something intelligible. And so because it's Saturn's job to impose limits and boundaries, then I actually think, and Pisces is not a very good place for imposing limits and boundaries, and so Saturn is a fish out of water here, then Jupiter giving some extra support to that Saturn looks good for the Saturn things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Helping to have some discernment as to what information to look at and what to focus on.
Discernment is a really good word here.
Yeah, like what's true, what's false.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that does seem to be the era we're going into. I mean, we're already there to a certain degree. Like, how do you know what's actually true? Especially
what's the time frame on this? The Saturn conjunction in Pisces with Jupiter and Uranus?
So it's ongoing the whole time. I'm not actually sure when it's exact. So I'm going to look that up right now.
Over the course of like April, like March, April, May, like.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's Jupiter is in Gemini for a whole year. So we'll see the square happen. It looks like at 17 degrees in August.
Okay. Thanks.
And then are we going to get another one after that? We might.
Cool.
Yeah, it looks like we get another one at 14 degrees in December. And so then there'll be another one probably in like February or something like that.
Okay.
So they do a little dance.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Mm-hmm. For a year. Cool. Yeah, so that's a lot of information. This is a jam-packed spring quarter.
I know.
It really is. Yeah, and so part of what I think is going on here is this is a turning point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like where things are not the same before this eclipse scenario and then these major ingresses as they are afterward.
Yeah.
Like I think there are some major changes that take place, probably, you know, like if there's some kind of major upset on the battlefield, for example, then that is likely to change the whole dynamic. Or, you know, I've heard people talking about like they're trying to destroy the Suez Canal or something like this, right? Like, so if that kind of thing were to happen, then, and it definitely looks like a great time to bottleneck waterways. So if we're thinking about like Mars, Saturn, and Pisces, right? Like destroying waterways or trouble in the water, right? Maybe something gets spilled into the water and it causes a major landscape change this way or something like that, right? So whatever kind of left field dynamics go on to change things in this major way, I think things are different beyond that point in such a way as to not even like whatever like presidential election we're looking at at the end of the year, whatever, like that shit doesn't make sense to us right now because we are BC right now, and that's going to be AD. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow, that's a great way to put it. Okay,
we're before eclipse.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to be doing mantras inside during that eclipse. Do you have any other like things you're looking forward to during this spring quarter, or advice to offer our listeners for the spring quarter?
Well, one thing that so this has been like a harrowing last 2 hours or something, right? So I've been forecasting calamity the whole time. It's worth noting that the new moon in Taurus after this solar eclipse, then we're going to get a new moon in Taurus. And that has two benefics right in the sign. Venus, who rules Taurus, is present in Taurus, and Jupiter is present in Taurus. And then after that, we get a new moon in Gemini where the same thing happens. Jupiter has moved into Gemini, Venus has moved into Gemini. So we get another new moon in Gemini, which is present with two benefics. And so even though that one's going to be under a square from Saturn, there's a lot of benefic energy going on here, right? And so I wonder, you know, and it's not, you know, this isn't our greatest Venus and Jupiter, right? They're under the beams of the sun and whatever, right? So they're like continually tangling with Uranus, unexpected disruptions and whatever else, right? But there is a kind of beneficence here that, you know, all hope is not lost here, right? Mm-hmm. And it's good to remember that ancestors forever have dealt with slavery and feudal institutions or plagues and pestilence and whatever else.
War and
some more war, and how about another war on top of that one, and all of this, right? And yet we persist, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, that all hope is not lost, even though it does look like major calamity out here.
And those might be some good times to take a rest and do some self-care.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because yeah. There's so much burnout energy under the eclipses that, like, you know, so if I were going to plan things during this time, I would say play as conservatively as possible during Aries season. While the sun is in Aries, then we're going to see a couple of eclipses. We're going to see a Mars-Saturn conjunction. Like, your shit is not going to go as you planned. And so don't start new things. Just try to keep a handle on whatever is already going on during that time. And then after you get done with that, your hands are going to be probably tired from holding the reins. So give yourself a little nappy time, right? And then see what you can make of the information landscape as you move forward once we get to Gemini time.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that I don't know if we mentioned before, but is very important. Yeah, don't start new things
during April.
In April, you know, before the eclipse. Yeah, wait until after the eclipse to start stuff.
Because it just won't go as expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I would say wait until if you can, right? Like you're probably not gonna have the opportunity to like some people are gonna like get evicted or whatever, you know what I mean? It's gonna be like unexpected, like oh, I just gotta go do this right now, and it is what it is. But once Mars moves into Aries, then that's really good for like war making and whatever, but it's also good for decisively heading forward and doing the thing that I and shaping the world in the image that I want it to be in. And so, even though it's Mars with the North Node, and that can be like a little much or something like this, that is more likely to head in a direction and really try for it rather than Mars and Pisces along with Saturn running into obstacles the whole way.
Though it also does seem a little burnouty, so even more
Big
important
time.
to
Yeah.
rest
One
during
thing that
those.
I recommend for Aries people all the time, people who have like strong Aries placements, people who got the moon in Aries or Mars in Aries or something like this, is schedule a nap. Those people tend to be really good in the morning time and then they burn out at a certain point. And so if you can just schedule your burnout, just be like, I'm gonna burn out at 2 p.m. That's just what's gonna happen. And so I'm gonna be in bed at 2 p.m. and I'm gonna get a second morning. I'm gonna get another morning where I can go and be effective. If you can like work that into your schedule, then you can be more effective probably.
And those new moons might be good naps.
Yeah. If you can sleep through the eclipse, I love that.
So I'm thinking about our theme for the conference at the end of July is like healing the healer. And I think it's going to come in really handy at that time after this eclipse season and a few months of being, put to the test in a way to just be able to relax. And we're going to have like a sound bath and lots of like rest time. So I think that'll come in really nice.
Def.
Okay, so this has been a fun forecast, Zamboni. It's always fun to predict doom and gloom, but someone's got to
Right.
do it.
It's true. I didn't choose this life. This life chose me.
So do you have anything coming up, or where can people find you, do readings with you?
Yeah, zambonifong.com. You can find me in that place. You can listen to the music there. You can get readings there. You can get some merch there. There's really cool artwork and all the rest of that. So yeah, it's a zambonifong.com is the central hub of all the Zambonifong things. Also, you can follow my social media for daily and weekly forecasts. My daily and weekly forecasts are definitely not as cute as that dog is.
Well, they're pretty cute though.
We got a cute little puppy
Yeah,
here,
he's here to
Percy.
say bye, everybody. Have a good eclipse season. Have a good spring.
Just been sleeping on my feet this whole time.
Word. Yeah.
Cheers.
Well, thanks again, Zamboni. Great to
Yeah,
talk
lovely
with
to
you.
see you.
Thanks for coming.